Blog Talk Radio.
Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio. The Jules. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. I'm so glad you could be with us tonight as we talk once again to Dawson Church, PhD. As some of you may remember, Dawson is the co-founder of the Soul Medicine Institute, and he's going to be talking about his latest book, The Genie in Your Genes, which has some really incredible scientific discoveries that are so fascinating. You're going to love it, so stay with us. I want to mention that Law of Attraction Radio Network has a brand new website, and the address is really, really easy to remember. It's loaradionetwork.com. So come on in, check out the new site. You can now listen live from every host page, and you can even participate in the live chat room there while you listen to your favorite show. To see all the great shows coming up, just click on the great host page or the show directory, and you can find everything that you want to hear. We have 4 brand new shows coming up starting tomorrow, so I hope you'll check them all out. On Monday nights, we are now going to have Master Your Universe with Sabrina Kinkle. And also on Monday nights is the Third Dimension Show with Larry and Frank. This is wonderful. And then on Tuesday, we have the New Energy Radio with Cassie Parks. And then on Wednesday night, you will experience a fantastic new psychic show called the Psychic Dimension Show with Jules Kennedy. With all of these shows, you'll be able to call in, ask questions, and use the chat room. Remember, if you can't listen live, you can always listen to the past shows through the orange RSS button or iTunes. So come on in and listen. You know what I do is I download all of the shows onto my MP3 player, which happens to be my cell phone. So I'm able to listen to all the shows while doing everything because my phone is always with me. And even if I get a phone call, that's okay. I interrupt the show and then I go immediately back. It works wonderfully. And this way, I can truly say that I am keeping myself plugged into consciously creating every single day. It really works. And here's who's coming up for next week. Lisa Nichols. We're going to have some fun together. So tune in for that. And hey, don't forget to stop by Cyrus World and say hi. I am now discovering that since my mind has merged into this virtual world, I am now preferring to jog around the island instead of flying. And you know what? I can actually feel my breathing and heartbeat increase. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? But there's really something scientific about this. You know, in my hypnotherapy practice, I will tell sports competition athletes to visualize perfecting their weakest areas of their game right before they go to sleep every night. So I think there must be something to seeing myself run everywhere in Cyrus World. I am visualizing and experiencing my jogging, and I can feel the tension from my shoulders just melt away. It's really, really quite fascinating. What's really terrific is that I am losing weight, and I have now a desire to exercise, all because I believe Cyrus is rewiring my brain. And what a better place to have my brain rewired than in a virtual world about the Law of Attraction. So keep popping in and meet me in Cyrus World. Let's have some fun. In today's world, more and more people are turning to the internet to make money. If you're serious about creating a new source of income, then make your website an easy site. TheEasySite.com is even a great way to rejuvenate your existing website and increase traffic flow while maintaining the site yourself. It's easy. Attract new income your way with a professional website the easy way. Remember, TheEasySite.com. That's www.TheEasySite.com. Now on with tonight's show with Dawson Church. I just love his new book, The Genie in Your Genes, which happened to win the Best Health Book Award. The subtitle to the book is Epigenetic Medicine and the New Biology of Intention. I think it's the best book in all categories for anyone looking for scientific evidence on how powerful our thoughts are. If anyone is in doubt about how the law of attraction works, read this book. Let me refresh your mind on who Dawson Church is. Dawson has edited or authored over 200 books in the field of health psychology and spirituality. He has collaborated on articles with many of the leading voices of our time, and he has been quoted in USA Today, CNN, the Los Angeles Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, Parenting, and many other national media. He earned his doctorate in integrative healthcare under the mentorship of neurosurgeon Norman Shealy, MD, PhD. He has a PhD in natural medicine as well as a clinical certification in energy psychology. Besides being an absolutely brilliant man, he has the most wonderful laugh that will completely uplift you. I'm so pleased to have him back on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Hi, Dawson.
Hey, it's a great pleasure to be here again. Thank you.
Dawson, I love your book, The Genie in the Genes. It's so fascinating. So let's start off with the first question here. At the beginning of the book, you are taking on a challenge by psychologist Ernest Rossi, who wrote Psychobiology of Gene Expression.
It's a tongue twister. Just saying the title of that book gets you a gold star.
That challenge is to get information away from the scientific journals and out into the mainstream world. Is this the reason why you wrote this book?
Yes, partly to make this information accessible, but also because I noticed that there were discoveries happening in different parts of science, like biology is really excited about epigenetics, and energy psychology is this new breakthrough in the psychology field and the energy medicine field, but all these groups of people aren't really talking to each other. So in The Genie in Your Genes, I trace the link between these different fields of endeavor and show how they all, when combined together in a single puzzle, show us this remarkable set of potentials we have for using consciousness to shift our gene expression.
You know, I just watched this brilliant a movie that's called The Living Matrix. And in it, they state that the genes do not predetermine our existence or anything else. How does that come into being with what you're saying?
There is a small group of genes, and geneticists are divided about the exact proportion, but the number I've heard most often is about 20% of our genes are fixed. And they code for things like height and eye color that are strongly inherited. But the other 80% of our genome is not fixed, and it's a shifting palette. And as the genome gets instructions from either outside the body or outside the cell to have a certain configuration, it's shifting the other 80% of our genes. So there's a small part of our genome that's fixed, but then there's the majority of it is engaged in conjunction and collaboration with these signals from outside the cell, and that's where the science of epigenetics comes into this.
Okay, great. Let's talk about that genie in the gene as you compare it with the story of the magic lamp and the genie.
Yeah, I use that analogy of the genie because essentially when Aladdin had a wish, had a desire, had a state of mind, had an intention, and then rubbed the lamp, the genie appeared and granted him that wish. And in very much the same way, as our thoughts, feelings, and intentions change, our biology, our bodies, our genes change right along with it. I'll give you some concrete examples. Say, for instance, you have an experience that startles you or frightens you. And this could be, for instance, as you walk past a neighbor's house, there's a white picket fence, there's a gate, and there's a great big dog that runs at you, rushes at you, barking. So you have this immediate stress response, and the genes in your body that code for hormones like adrenaline and cortisol and histamines that make your heart beat faster, all of these things have a very sudden rise. Those genes click on in a second or two, and you start to make lots of adrenaline, lots of cortisol. But as you walk past the house and the dog goes away and you can't hear the dog anymore, you start to reduce your levels of all those stress hormones. However, when you think back to the incident and you feel upset about that, if you feel upset about that, you can have exactly the same stress response. Your body has no way of telling that the one experience was a real experience and the second experience is just a memory, a memory with a strong emotional content. So anytime we have a memory, a resentment, an anger, the recollection of something bad that happened to us in the past, I work a lot with veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam to some extent, and if they have a flashback or a nightmare, all of these things, even though there's no real dog, there's no real threat, there's no real barking, okay, mm-hmm. but just the emotional memory of an old threat or an old incident or an old resentment or an old anger or an old upset is producing exactly that same surge of stress hormones in your bloodstream that a real event would have done.
Dawson, what's the long-term effects from not taking care of these emotional traumatic events in our lives?
Yeah, the key word just said is long run. Our bodies are very easily able to handle these short-term stresses and get over them. So if you just walk on and you never think about the dog again, your cortisol level very rapidly normalizes and all your stress hormones drop. But if you keep on regurgitating the incidents in your mind, if you keep on remembering or catastrophizing, you know, there are people you meet who always find the bad in everything, that always can spot the dark cloud, no matter how many silver linings there are.
Right.
And that tendency over time, over long periods of time, produces high cortisol levels in your body. And those high cortisol levels, in the research in the book which I talk about, shows that high cortisol for a long time correlates with things like heart disease and high blood pressure, cancer, and diabetes. So people who have a habit of stressing themselves by negative emotions over and over and over again wind up driving their cortisol levels high for long periods of time. And so it's this over time triggering of the stress response that eventually shows up as physical disease.
So we need to be mindful of our reactions to life. When we react to something, it may have to do with emotions that may lead to something on down the road.
Very much so, yes.
Now, I noticed in the book, perhaps it is in the back of the book, that you state some of us have been born with a gene that makes us negative. But having said that, we can actually retrain the mind to think positive.
Yeah, some of us have a habit of doing this much more than others. Some people have resilience and are optimistic naturally and can see the bright side and bounce back very quickly from negative experiences. Others have a persistent pattern of seeking out those negative things, and they trigger this gene expression over and over and over again. So the difference really shows up in your health over a period of years. For example, one of the examples I use in the book is identical twins born with exactly the same genome. So they don't have similar genes, they have exactly the same genes. But on average, identical twins die more than 10 years apart. So big difference in lifespan, big difference in health very often, that's the result of these epigenetic factors and also their predisposition to do things like ruminating about catastrophic events or having a bright outlook on life. Now, there are a lot of other factors as well, like environmental toxins and where they're raised and so on, that affect them as well. But our genomes diverge as our thoughts and feelings and persistent emotional habits diverge. And in Chapter 11 of the book, Chapter 11 is called Your Happy Gene. And it's all about genome studies of people who either are very unhappy or very happy and what it does to their genome and the very different health results that come about as a result of that.
But you can train your mind to be a happier mind, to let go of the negative.
Yes, in fact, in Chapter 11 of The Genie and New Genes, I talk about a study by Dean Ornish, and he took a group of men who had prostate cancer, and they didn't get any conventional treatment. They elected not to have regular treatment, and instead, he put them on a program of retraining their minds and their emotions. He had them learn meditation, which, of course, makes you calmer. Mm-hmm. He had them exercise for a half hour a day, which improves your mood. And he also put them on a low-fat diet. And he found that after just 3 months in this program, over 500 genes had changed their expression. They'd come on or they'd come off. And they were genes to do with things like the regulation of free radicals. Mm-hmm. They were genes that had to do with things like the regeneration of cells in your body. And what's called programmed cell death. And so retraining yourself and deliberately choosing habits like meditation that trigger positive gene expression winds up having a huge health effect in just a few months.
Wow. You mentioned a link between the areas of the body and traumatic emotional states being illustrated by the use of Botox and removing the worry wrinkles. Well, I just love this. And perhaps it's a justification for me to go out and get some Botox.
Yeah, that was kind of a tongue-in-cheek, funny way. But just the physiology, one of the crucial things is that I'm trying to point out the link between changing our physiology and our emotions and our genes. Because if all we do is change our psychology or spirituality and don't change our bodies, I believe the effect is much less pronounced. We need to do both. And so people who just meditate or just read inspirational books but don't have any kind of physical practice that helps them shift, I think will do a lot less well than those who do something physically to implant these kinds of changes. And the example in the book with the Botox patients was fascinating, that they took depressed people and gave them Botox, removed all of their worry lines and wrinkles, and their depression improved. And there are lots of examples like this from the book of how changing our physical state actually changes our emotional state. And the deliberate one that I talk about in the book a lot, the way of doing this deliberately and quickly, is called Emotional Freedom Techniques, or EFT, which involves tapping or rubbing on these stress reduction points on the body. And it's quite amazing. You'll take somebody who's really upset or who's going through a big emotional response, maybe they're angry or resentful or triggered in some way, and if they just tap or rub on these stress reduction points in about a minute, maybe 2 minutes, you'll see their stress level go way down. So I recommend that people learn these kinds of techniques to deliberately take control not only of your attitude and emotions, but also of your health. We just finished a study, the first study using this method EFT for weight loss.
Oh.
And there's also another published study and a big trial underway of another therapy called TAT, Tapas Acupressure Technique, similar technique using physical stimulus for weight loss. And they found that people who use these techniques, not only can they lose weight more easily because it reduces their craving level, but they tend to keep it off because when they have subsequent cravings for whether it's food or alcohol or tobacco or whatever it is they crave, they use these very simple energy techniques, and those can reliably reduce their cravings so they don't gain the weight back again.
Personally, for me, I'm going to try the Botox. Get rid of the worry lines. You know, I thought the study designed and conducted by Dean Radden was so interesting, where he had two people meditate sitting side by side, showing incredible results with the EEG machine. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, what he does is he puts these people into what's called a Faraday cage or a sealed room. And this is a room that has lead-lined walls and has layers of screening in it that stop all electromagnetic radiation from the environment getting into the room. So you can't transmit like a radio signal or an electrical signal through this, into this kind of shielded room. And what he did was he had people sit together and meditate together and have their brain waves, their brain states, and train. And he then separated them, put them in sealed rooms, so there was no possible way that any signals could travel between the two of them. He then would shine a light, bright light, into the eyes of one person, and at the same moment he did that, they found that the optic nerve of the second person was affected. So again, there's no known way in which this could occur, given the ways we conventionally think of a signaling happening between two organisms or two human beings. And yet there was some kind of effect, some kind of signal that traveled between them to result in this happening. He also did a similar experiment with cancer patients and their partners and found that as their partners thought compassionate, loving thoughts about them at random intervals, that the cancer patients who, again, were in the shielded room had an effect in their brain states. So we appear to be able to send signals and receive signals from other human beings at great distances, not using any of the known kind of frequencies that are normally employed in communication. And this points to some kind of sort of quantum effect, that we're using some other aspect of a quantum reality to produce these kinds of communications.
Wow, how fascinating. And that's really the definition of consciousness, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's what I point to over and over again in the book, is how we can deliberately use our consciousness, shift our consciousness to produce health and to produce happier states of being. And, you know, I'm a great fan of these, of many of the other kinds of techniques I describe, but I really believe that if you can find two or three really simple things you can do just to shift your consciousness, that you will then have a much both happier and healthier life. Because if you have something you can grab reliably and quickly, that when you're upset or angry or emotionally disturbed or triggered in some way or another, and, you know, face it, I mean, throughout the course of our work lives, throughout the course of our professional lives and marriages and kids and partners and so on, we have plenty of things that stress us. And if people have something that they can use to shift their consciousness quickly, then they're much more likely to be able to balance themselves again. And then if they do that, if they get in the habit of doing that over and over and over again, that in the long term will affect their health.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. You also talk about prescription belief in the book. If a doctor would take his prescription pad to write not of a drug, but of a spiritual exercise, it may be far more effective than any pharmaceutical out there. I love this.
Yes, that was a wonderful physician called James Dillard, who's the author of several groundbreaking books. And he was working with a cardiac patient who had had a heart attack. And he reached for his prescription pad, and he wrote down on the pad, after hearing this man's long, sad story, he wrote down, "Long talks with your rabbi every week." And the book is full of these examples of how spirituality, energy, and other aspects of consciousness can produce really striking effects on our health. And this this patient, who he calls Irv in the book, he winds up making a really remarkable recovery with the aid, again, of this spiritual counsel rather than going to the level of physical manipulation of his cells.
And this is why this book must go mainstream. Everybody needs to know this. Let's talk about the medicine for body politics. This is really great stuff here. Great chapter.
Yes, and it's really remarkable if you think what the effects might be on our society and on the world as a whole if large groups of people learn to reduce their emotional stress. Because wars and conflicts between nations and groups and tribes are partly the result of a lot of individual stresses that get expressed. For example, the whole in Iraq right now, the whole conflict between the Shias and Sunnis, and this tit-for-tat violence that's going on, or with Israelis and Palestinians, again, just a cycle of violence. And so a lot of individual tragedies, and then they wind up becoming this big national tragedy with two groups of people who keep on attacking each other. How do you break those kinds of cycles of violence? And what I advocate in the book is I talk about the value and the importance of individual change and how people have the tools to, when they suffer an insult, when they suffer an injury, if they have the resilience to be able to nurture themselves and shift themselves out of these angry emotional states, that can make a huge difference to societies. I also talk about the experiences in Kosovo, where groups of people learned energy psychology techniques and were then able to shift their anger toward the Serbs, who had attacked them and in some cases killed many, many people in their villages. So they were able to gain relief from the suffering and the anger and the desire for retribution by learning these techniques. And if large numbers of people do this, then I think that's a very real prospect that as we release all this individual anger and distress, that the effect shows up in our societies.
Yes, this is fascinating stuff. The epigenetic influence of wars between nations. So you bring up the question, what would happen if an entire population became less fearful and anxious generation by generation? If humanity could grasp this concept, that would be the end of all wars. We would truly experience peace.
Yes, and I have this. It sounds fanciful right now, but what if, as there's about to be a conflict, we had teams of people who would go in there and intervene and help all of those involved in the conflict just deal with their own misaligned energy, with their own emotional charge? That emotional charge drives so much conflict, and if people had a way of reducing that, and if we as a civilization had a way of reliably taking people down from those highly charged states, then our international negotiations would be different, our financial system would be different, our whole social interrelationship would change. And again, I don't think that's going to happen like this year or next year, but in time, I think there is a trend for people to realize that the old solution of sort of top-down authoritarian rule and decision-making is not going to get us very far. We need collaboration, we need to understand each other, and taking our emotional reactions, reactivity toward each other, and letting that dissipate is a key part of making that change.
Yes, this is interesting because you're seeing mass consciousness at work. Not just the individual, but of entire areas need to take on this mentality of understanding.
Yes, and you do see areas where the whole mass consciousness is much more peaceful. I'll give you one example. I live in Northern California, and the driving habits of people in Sonoma County are by and large very courteous. Like, you'll see people pausing in a stream of traffic to allow someone else to merge. Or at a stop sign, sometimes there's a four-way stop, and everyone's saying, "Oh, you go first." So nobody goes. It's quite comical. That, you know, just on the whole, very polite drivers, and at a fairly low social stress level. Now, that doesn't mean everybody is like this, but I mean the majority of people tend to have this. So that reduces the stress of a whole population. And if this happens in education, in government, in large social structures, then the kind of social group anger and animosity we see that drives these tribal conflicts can dissipate, and we no longer sort of leap to each other's throats when there's a problem. So yeah, these therapies have a big potential in the long term. The way I talk about this in the book as well is, I'm involved in this very ambitious research project called the Iraq Vets Stress Project, mm-hmm. where we're taking veterans from Iraq and Vietnam and Afghanistan, and we're giving them free counseling with energy psychology, shifting their emotional charge around their combat stresses. Because again, if you know, after Vietnam, we did very little to take this group of people who were severely stressed by their combat experiences and reintegrate them into society. And I have a real desire to see us not repeat that mistake with Iraq. And so with the Iraq Bed Stress Project, we take these veterans, and hopefully as a group, we can really show them how they can shift away from that highly stressed state and relieve the emotional charge of those combat memories, and then produce a whole group of people who don't suffer in that way for years and decades the way the Vietnam vet suffered.
I absolutely applaud you for everything you're doing for the Iraq veteran. I think that this is so necessary and so overdue. But at the same time, wouldn't it be great if our military people, our soldiers, actually learned about all this information that we're talking about so that they could go and teach EFT to the people in the other regions so that they can heal themselves? We would create a better society. We would leave that society better than when we came in. And that's the intention, I would think, that we're going there to begin with. If we could just get the word out that we as individuals are able to heal ourselves, that would heal the world.
You have an enormous leverage over your own healing, and doctors and hospitals and therapists and so on are your helpers and your assistants in the healing journey. But one of the big problems, I think, in our society is people have taken these wonderful helping professionals and displaced all of the responsibility onto them and neglected the things they can do themselves that are of great help. And so, for example, with the Dean Ornish study I mentioned earlier, the participants learned meditation, which they can do, and they chose this healthy diet as well, which, again, you have to stick to your diet. And so it was these healthy things that the patients did that produced the reduction in what's called the PSA marker, tumor marker. So it's like a marker of how active the cancer is in your body. And in just 3 months, again, those cancer markers went way down, and their mood, their emotional indicators went way up, and over 500 genes shifted, all through things that people did themselves. There was no medical intervention there. Now, you go try and find a doctor who will be able to do something, or a therapist, and change over 500 genes. That's not something you're going to find, but you can take control of your health, and then when you need a doctor or a therapist, you get the appropriate person. But this is really the critical factor in healthcare, is to have people actually take responsibility for their own health and then drive the changes that can make a long-term difference to their outcome.
Would you say that we're not a victim of our genes?
We're not a victim of our genes. Now, as far as the power to change goes, there's good news and bad news. And the good news is, yes, it's possible. The bad news is, it's hard. What happens is that there was a doctor called Eric Kandel, K-A-N-D-E-L, and I talk about him quite a bit in the book. He won the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 2000 by showing that when you stimulate a neural circuit, so let's think of a bundle of wiring, a bundle of nerve cells, when you stimulate that circuit repeatedly, within a single hour, the number of connections in that neural bundle doubles. Okay? So if you have a repeated stimulation of a part of your nervous system or part of your brain, by thinking a repetitive thought or doing a repetitive action over and over and over again, you're doubling the number of nerve cells in that bundle. So we tend to get into habitual actions and repeat them over and over and over again. Say, for example, you have a bad habit. You do the bad habit over and over and over again for many, many years. You're building a really thick bundle of neurons along the pathways in your brain and your body to do that bad habit. You then try and break the habit. And you want to learn to meditate, or you want to stop smoking or something, and you have almost no neural bundles to do with that new habit. So you have this really thick neural bundle with the old habit and almost no resources for the new habit. So it's really hard to change these habits. That's why people keep on, you know, going off their addictions or getting into bad relationships or bad jobs or bad situations over and over again. It's really hard. If you're a therapist or a body worker, you know, or a doctor for that matter, you know that it's really difficult to get patients to change, that people are resistant to change, that they're used to doing things a certain way, and that to break that cycle is difficult. And in the book, in The Genie in Your Genes, I mention the very few reliable things I found that can break that cycle, interrupt that pattern, and put you on the path to change and to building up the neural bundles that have to do with good habits. So it's hard to change, that's the one thing, but it's possible to change. And in the book, I try and give people the best leverage points, the best tools I found that can result in rewriting those old instructions and those old codes.
And you're talking about EFT, you're talking about TAT, and you're even talking about the meridian points and rubbing those, right?
Yes, that, and I mentioned several things, visualization, altruism, optimism, attitude, belief, as well as things like EFT, energy psychology, and energy medicine can all have the same effect.
So you mentioned it is hard, but it's not impossible, especially if we have the tools that you mentioned.
We do have the tools to change, and it is quite remarkable. For example, I've seen Vietnam veterans who have been plagued with insomnia and nightmares and all kinds of physical problems for decades, sometimes 35 years. And it's just amazing. In fact, on one of my websites called the Iraq Best Stress Project, we have video of people, and they have been suffering with these combat traumas for decades. And in just one or two sessions with EFT, they're able to completely break the hold those old traumatic memories have on them. So, yeah, there are these potent tools that can be very effective in helping us rewire ourselves.
And that is great information to get out to all of the listeners. Now, you talked in depth about the 10 principles of epigenetic medicine, and the first one is intentions first, outcomes second. I think this is really brilliant. Could you speak on this for a second?
This is really important. We talk about medical outcomes, and if you have a rash and the rash goes away, that's a good outcome. If the rash persists, that's a bad outcome. And we're so focused on these outcomes, but what we often overlook is intention. Rather than looking for an outcome, look at your intention. Start with your intention. And what is your belief? For example, if you have a negative belief about yourself, if you believe that I'm not good enough, if I believe I'm not worthy, if I believe I can't do this, if I believe that bad things always happen to me. I was in the supermarket a few days ago, and there was a beautiful young woman, and she was having trouble with the coffee grinder. She couldn't figure out how to make it work. She was trying it this way and trying it that way. And I said, let me help you there. And I showed her this little trick to this coffee grinder. I showed her how to make it work. And she said something like, I can never get things right. So I said to her, well, you know, you learn, and maybe you can. And she said, oh, no, good things never happen to me.
Oh.
I said, well, something good just did happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
She said, I always have bad luck.
Oh.
I said, your luck just changed. So I kept on, and we just burst into laughter because it was so funny. But you know, she had all this negative self-talk. So we have this negative self-talk. Eventually, those negative emotional states produce disease in our body. Maybe you know you have some kind of say you have a benign tumor that develops. Okay, so you go and have it cut out of your body. But if that belief is still there that I'm not, I can't, I won't, I'll never, I don't deserve, and so on, then that basic constellation of emotional energy remains untouched. So you've gone and had an operation, or you've had the Botox, or you've had the whatever, but the underlying stuff, the underlying energy pattern, the underlying emotional charge is still there. So what I'm stressing in the genie in your genes over and over and over again is, rather than trying to deal with the that surface stuff of the physical symptoms, focus on the intentions, the beliefs, the underlying things that are driving all that. That's what I mean by intentions first and outcomes second.
Boy, that certainly puts everything in proper perspective here. The second one you have is healing is a process, not an event.
Yeah, and we tend to think of healing as an event. And, for example, I mentioned the example of weight loss in the book, that I'll go on a diet and I'll lose 10 pounds. Well, it's a much more potent thing to contemplate what I eat at this meal and the next meal and the next meal and the next meal, and that healing is a whole series of small and subtle choices we make, not a big event. It isn't like, you know, you get sick, you have a course of the disease, and you have a resolution to it. And some diseases really are like that. I mean, colds or flu, for example, have those kinds of cycles. Healing on the whole, healing of our lives, is something we either are going to focus on every day and every moment, to where we give ourselves the tools to release our stresses and reduce our emotional charges, or not. And so I urge people to think of it as this long-term project, that every day you will do those things that love yourself. You'll cultivate self-talk that loves yourself. You'll cultivate habits that are full of self-love. You will use prayer and attitude change and all the other things you can use in consciousness to give yourself a happy and a good life, and focus on the process of your life and not on the events so much.
And the process could include a healthy belly laugh every day to get rid of the stress.
At least one, and preferably 1,000.
Good.
Lots and lots and lots of them.
And heart-centered is the third principle.
Yes, and that means the degree of deep emotional connection you have with the people around you, especially the healing professionals you have around you. I had one therapist, specifically in therapy, called dual relationships. We have both a personal relationship with a person and do therapy with them. And psychotherapists are not allowed to have dual relationships. But one famous therapist once said to me, "Dawson, every relationship of mine that's successful in, as a therapist has been a dual relationship. I love that person. And it's my love for that person that drives the success of my therapy." You'll find this with doctors as well. You'll find that good doctors really care. So what I ask people to do is, when they're looking for a medical provider, make sure that the person has good credentials and good expertise, but also, do you have a strong heart connection with them? You need to have that kind of energy with your healing professionals, I believe, to engage the full potential of healing. And so that's why I say in the book, look for somebody with whom you have this kind of heart connection and make them part of your health team.
Boy, I agree with you on that one. That connection is so important. And then you go into number four, being focused, and five, treat the whole systems. But six, you have healing before the disease. Go into that a little bit.
Yes. It's important if we have a disease to treat the disease, but it's vital that we think about our health not as just warding off the occasional disease, but as creating an ongoing state of positive health every day. And a disease sort of is like a deficit where we have to deal with this problem. But rather than just saying, okay, I'm going to be having, I won't have any problems, how can you actually boost your health and vitality? And what we find is that people learn these emotional tools to shift their emotional selves to where they're happier and more balanced every day, then, for one thing, disease has a harder time taking root. But for another thing, their vitality, their energy level can really rise. And their performance, their mental performance, their sports performance, all of their performance markers can increase. So rather than just focusing on preventing disease, it's also important that we focus on actually taking our baseline of health and raising it. And what I found is that these kinds of techniques do that. And for example, I did a study, a randomized double-blind study, controlled study, with a group of athletes. I took some really healthy people, And I divided them into two groups. They were basketball players at Oregon State University. And I gave one group a brief EFT intervention, and the other got what's called a placebo, a fake intervention. And I measured their number of free throws and also their jump height, how high they could jump before and after. And so this wasn't people who were sick. This was people who were healthy. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that the group that got the EFT wound up doing 38% better on free throws after EFT. So even if you take healthy people, you can boost their levels of performance and well-being dramatically with these kinds of techniques. That's why I'm saying, you know, the disease is one thing, but focus on building resilient, reliable health in your life in every way as a practice.
Then you mentioned number 7, magnify the body's inherent self-healing powers. And then number 8, stream to appropriate treatment plans. But number 9 really caught my attention because it's revisioning death. Let's talk about that.
That is so important because death is seen as the enemy. And if you're a doctor, often as a failure. If a patient dies, it's a failure. But, you know, death is inevitable for everyone. And coming to terms with your own death and not seeing it as an enemy, but seeing it as a change of state is so important. And if all your, you know, one big way this shows up in our society very dysfunctionally is that something like 2/3 of all of our health dollars are spent treating chronic conditions which are really not susceptible to treatment. And in the book somewhere I have a number of what proportion of our health dollars go into treating people in the last like 2 months of life. But an enormous chunk of our healthcare spending is focused on just prolonging people's lives a little bit, often when they're in enormous agony and ready to die. Mm. So this, the kind of denial and issues as a society that Americans have around death really is causing suffering, is causing enormous wasteful spending. And if we could just get to the point where we say, you know, at a certain point, it's someone's time to move on, and looking at how we can make that transition as peaceful and as full of love and nurturing and gratitude as possible, I think that kind of revisioning of the whole dying process would make us a much, much healthier society.
I agree with you. So let me ask, being a scientist, what do you think death is?
My personal belief is that that our consciousness endures. Consciousness can't be created or destroyed. It can be changed, but that our consciousness, that which gives rise to our cells, our bodies, the life force in us, the life energy in us, does not disappear. But of course, our body dies and our ego dies, and so the bits of us that endure are the aware bits, and the ego and the body disappear. Now, how that consciousness, what happens to the consciousness, is interesting. I personally believe that we're absorbed back into what Taoists call the Tao, the great all of things, and that we might then at some point, you know, some part of our consciousness might pop back in to another part of experience. But I think that that my understanding is that that central part of our life essence that animates our bodies, that does endure even though our egos and our bodies disappear.
I like how you reminded us that the ego dies along with the body. I thought that was interesting.
Yes. In fact, the ego is going to die, I believe. So I think that any experience we have that helps the process along while we're alive is useful. And so many things, you know, things, difficult experiences often can help our ego just give up a little bit and no longer be so dominant. And you, the magic of you, endures even though your ego might, you know, have a difficult time. And so letting go of that ego clinging to things being a certain way. The ego wants, you know, wants, Buddha defines suffering as seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. That's how he defines suffering. And the ego, of course, is always looking for what will support it, what it, you know, getting what it wants, what will cause pleasure, and avoiding that little which will cause the pain. But when you move back into that being state, then you aren't so focused on that, and even seemingly painful experiences, you breathe, you learn from them, and you realize that that being part of you does keep on going, even though your ego might get smashed up by some of the events of life.
If we can learn to live in joy while we are on this planet, I wonder what that translates to after we die. That could be a very thought-provoking subject.
I think that's probably the crucial challenge of being human, is to learn to live joyfully, because joy is not dependent very much on outside circumstances. You can find people who are already wealthy and healthy who are very unhappy, and people who are very sick and impaired and poor who are very happy. And whatever our outer circumstances, learning to find the joy and stay in joy is critical. And I talk about emotional charge a lot, because it's all those negative emotions that keep us away from joy. And so as we're able to release those, we then can move into that joyful state. And human adults often forget this. They get so stuck in their worries and their drama. They believe their own drama, mm-hmm. that it becomes mesmerizing to them, and they lose that joy, whereas with children, of course, it keep on releasing all the bad stuff and going for the good stuff and staying in joy. Here in the office, we often will tell jokes. Like, we'll just stop in the middle of the day and say, let's find a joke, and tell a joke, and then tell another joke. And anything you do like that to shift the energy can really help you in having a lighter life, lighter workplace. You know, for example, if you're in a relationship, like I had one colleague I was working with, and I felt the energy was becoming very heavy with him. So I said, let's lighten up the energy. And we did. We just did some things which shifted it. So whatever you can do to reclaim that joy, after all, you are meant to live a fabulous, wonderful, empowered, joyful life. Why delay it one day or one moment? I mean, just grab whatever you can to give yourself that blessing right now.
That is so beautifully put. I love it. So here's the final question. Knowing and understanding the mind-body connection, why in the world would we need health insurance?
Well, I think we need a lot less of it if that were to happen, because as I mentioned earlier, in a massive study done by a big HMO called Kaiser Permanente, mm-hmm. they found that higher amounts of unresolved emotional trauma from childhood resulted in higher rates of hepatitis, diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer, heart disease, smoking, and several other ills, depression. And so people need less health services the happier they are. And the more unhappy they are, the more likely they are to get sick and need those health services. So you are doing a huge benefit to your health if you become happy, if you find things to help yourself become happier. And so as how this will affect the health system is that as we teach people these ways of releasing their emotional trauma, then they will need those kinds of medical interventions less frequently. And, of course, that results in a lower cost to society as medical care costs go down, and also much improved quality of life to the person who's happier. So it really benefits everybody. If you get happier and you make everyone around you happier and you stay happy and you learn happiness and spread happiness, you are having a big effect several layers out from your own personal little world.
Perhaps we need happiness insurance instead of health insurance.
Happiness skills and happiness classes. I mean, imagine if kids learn to reduce their emotional tension and emotional stress. I've done one study, for example, which shows that their test grades improve as their anxiety goes down. So if you can help kids who are stressed, who are dealing with educational problems, to be happier and have less anxiety. Whatever you can do anywhere in the world to reduce your anxiety, reduce your stress, you'll find that your performance and your quality of life goes up.
Okay, any school teachers who is out there, start a happiness class for your students. Let's get this world on track here. And it looks like we're running out of time. So, Dawson, please tell people how to get the book, The Genie in Your Genes.
The website is, the book is Genie in Your Genes, and the website is Genie Bestseller, G-E-N-I-E, GenieBestseller.com. And the Iraq Vets website is stressproject.org, and that's where veterans, Vietnam veterans, Iraq veterans can go to get 6 free sessions on energy therapies and also get resources for treatment in their area.
I know that you're off right now to do a workshop in San Diego, but is there any other workshops or anything you want to announce to the listeners?
I'm doing several workshops in Europe this summer. I'm doing couples workshops called The Energies of Love, where we apply this to couple conflicts. And you'll be amazed when members of, either member of a couple learns how to take their own emotional trauma and stress and triggering and release it. It has a big effect on the energy system of the whole couple. And it improves your family life, your relationships with children and parents. And so I'm teaching several places in Europe in the next couple of months, also back in the U.S. this fall. And all of that you can see at DawsonChurch.com, D-A-W-S-O-N, DawsonChurch.com. Mm-hmm. There's a schedule of where I'm speaking next. And these workshops and classes are fabulous. People walk in, they have certain levels of anxiety and stress and depression and so on, and we actually measure their levels before and after, and we show that they have big drops in depression and anxiety, but also large drops in pain and cravings after one of these workshops. So they have an enormous effect on people, and that effect lasts a long time. So I would really encourage you to go ahead and sign up for a workshop or a couples counseling session, because the effects will spread far beyond the immediate little bit of work you do to potentially affect all the rest of your life as well.
Wow, that sounds so interesting, that couples energy workshop. Ooh, very good. Anyway, we are almost out of time. I really want to thank you, Dawson, for coming on and sharing all of this really, really terrific information.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. I enjoyed being here. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Dawson. And we're going to get you on for the next best-selling book that you have. And to all the wonderful listeners, thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good one. Thank you for joining us on Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. For more information, go to Law of Attraction Radio Network at lawofattracttalkradio.com or lawofattractiontools.com.